There is rebellion in the wind.
A new world order. A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
For nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out an all-points bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order.
Attention.
A new world order.
Attention.
Government is
an emergency. Repeat. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going
to
call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens. What kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones. Dutch Jones
radio program.
And now for something completely different.
Howdy ho, neighbors. I got to turn down the studio monitor there. You're listening to Stronghold Radio, coming to you from the church at Cahuilla, California, right here in the belly button of Central California, bringing you the militant Christian worldview over all kinds of outlets. I want to thank everybody for tuning in, all of our pod people, our downloaders, our embeds, and especially the folks that rebroadcast us, Liberty Tree Radio, the folks over at, what is that? What's the other one called? Watchman Radio? I keep saying Watchtower Radio, and everybody thinks we're being carried by the Jehovah's Witnesses. Watchman Radio, Militia Radio, and everybody else that cares. Especially thank you to that little AM station up there in the Finger Lakes region of New York that carries our signal, Scotty. Well, you're tuning in for a special in-studio interview. Usually we have people call in over the phone. And sparing no expense, as we normally do here at Stronghold Radio, we flew in Larry Wick from Alaska. It took him 14 connections, 17 hours or something to get here.
Wasn't that bad.
But he got into Fresno. We picked him up, and he's been beating up on our people all day. So in studio, I have Larry Wick here. Larry, welcome, and thank you for coming in.
Oh, it's good to be here.
Good, good. It's good to have you. I've been telling folks about you for several weeks now, months, as we've been anticipating you coming up. Maybe it's better that you speak for yourself sometimes instead of having me do it, because I have no idea explicitly what it is we're going to be learning other than what I've studied from your older DVDs. What are you going to be doing with us this weekend? If we can start there, and then maybe you can go into the history of why and how you did this if you want to. It's your form. It's like the campfire. You take it, sir.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say how beautiful it is here. If you ever get a chance to stop by and see this place, it's very, very impressive. I'm going to have a great weekend. Doing what I do is, I've been in martial arts all over 40 years. And before I go any farther, I think anyone that trains in any martial art is fantastic, whether it's judo, wrestling, aikido, any type of training, I think is fantastic. There's so many different self-defense programs out there, and I have nothing but good things to say about them. I know every instructor out there is doing their best to help the public, and I'm just very glad to be part of that kind of society.
Great.
To be able
great.
To put that out there.
Yeah, and that's reflected in the videos we have seen, that it's about respect. It's more focused on reality and saving people, really, and that's what we liked about it. It was about saving your own skin. It wasn't fancy. It wasn't, you know, hoopla. And that's why we definitely sought you out. So it seems to be. I'm looking forward to learning firsthand this stuff.
In creating Split Second, it's a totally different paradigm shift. And I think as what you saw today, it's hard for people to switch a paradigm shift of all the things that they've done in the past.
We've got a lot of luggage.
Yeah. Well, it's not luggage. It's just a switch you got to be able to shut off and turn back on.
Good.
In one minute I'm teaching a karate class. The next moment I'm teaching a Split Second class. Two totally different things. It's body mechanics and attacking the mind, making the person do things that he doesn't want to do is what makes it so effective. There's no kicks or punches or throws or locks, and I don't want people to go, what do you do, to spit on them? It's just pure body mechanics, and it's very hard to explain unless you experience it. I think it looks doesn't look real, but it's a very realistic program because of the mindset that we have.
Well, it's just like somebody in our studio audience here said, when I watched your DVD, I had to stop it in slow-mo because you can't see it. And today when you're doing some demos with the soldiers that we brought up from our Code 20 outreach for the soldiers that are coming back,
I watched them. They were like, wait a minute, what did I just see? And even the pastor today said, what did he call that, key?
A chi.
A chi. Are you using chi to get me? I don't know what that is.
But no.
I thought it was a chia pet or something.
No, not that.
But it's amazing. People think there's a trick to it. It's not. That's the simplicity of it.
Yeah, it's a total different mindset. That's one thing about Split Second, is we deal with the mindset of the highest levels of violence, because if you can take care of the highest levels of violence calmly and effectively, then the lower levels of violence are much easier to handle. The mindset is always that there's more than one person, and that person has a weapon, whether you see it or not. And that's a very important complex. And you've got to be very, very careful of your legal ramifications also.
Yeah.
And whether you're trained with a firearm or with a knife or any type of weapon, you've got to be very conscious of what you're doing at the moment of an assault. You can't go beyond the limits, because the legal systems are very tough on today's society. Even when you think you're right, you may be wrong, and your family could pay for the rest of their life because of something that you've done.
And at that moment of crisis, that split second, like your hat says, you don't want to be thinking of those things.
Exactly.
You don't want to be going, what's my lawyer's advice going to be on this?
Exactly, exactly. And the number one thing is if you can always escape, escape. And if you're ever going to be robbed, please, to whoever's listening to this, if it's just your wallet or whatever, give it to them.
It's not worth it.
Yeah. There's been a lot of people killed that have been trained, and for no good reason. You know, we've had some very skilled Muay Thai. There's a story where he was killed a couple of years ago, actually a Muay Thai champion.
Wow.
And someone stole his car, and he went after the car, and the guy just shot him. You know,
yeah.
So you know, you can't take one thing and think it's going to turn out this way. This guy wasn't going to fight fair.
And you know, you don't know the area here, but we have a lot of violence in the valley, not where we are, but in the valley where we drove you through real quick so we wouldn't get shot. last night, a clerk chased a teenager who stole a six-pack of beer and got stabbed in the chest, and he was in critical condition, last I heard. So the violence is out there. It's very realistic. But even with all of it going on, most people in America never have to experience this level of violence. They never have to use
it. Right, and that's why I think so many people are not aware of what's really going on. They have the mindset, it's not going to happen to me. It's kind of a nice way to live in a way if you're not always worried, but you got to be able to take care of yourself also.
Yeah.
A lot of people I work with is when something's happened to them, they never thought it would, but it did.
Yeah.
And then they come and ask for help after it's too late. You know, we could have prevented it at the beginning, and sometimes tragedies happen that don't have to happen.
We're great Monday morning quarterbacks,
aren't
we?
Yeah. So it's being able to prevent it, just with verbal skills or whatever.
So how long has Split Second Survival been around?
It's always evolving, first of all. It's been 15 years at least now, and this is the fourth level of different kinds of videos have been out and stuff like that, but it's morphed itself into other government. You know, we've worked on a program we call it RESPECT, Restraint Elimination Systems, Practical Effective Control Techniques. And we use that in institutions and stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's pure from Split Second. It's the goal of any professional. Whenever I train anyone, like this weekend, I'm going to treat all of you guys as professionals. And a professional is someone that deals with violence without causing damage if possible. They don't want to be sucked into the judicial system or whatever.
Right.
A professional, if they can get away, they'll get away. Keep violence down to a minimum. It's the goal that we reach.
Why let them defeat you twice?
Yes, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Once in the street and once in the courts.
Yes,
you know.
Absolutely.
Why did you come up with it? What was the reason? What was the problem you saw that needed the solution that is Split Second Survival?
Well, I'm a smaller person. I weigh about 180 pounds, and I've been in martial arts all my life.
That may be small for Alaska.
Okay.
Just so people understand that.
Dealing with violence, so it's, martial arts deal a lot with kicking and punching and fighting, but most styles out there don't deal with firearms and knives and multiple attackers realistically.
Yeah.
And I found that in my training and stuff, people, I used to teach classes before, and I would be beat. And I'm supposed to be the instructor.
Yeah.
You know, you got a guy 280 pounds with a knife in his hand, and I'd crack him with my best kick, and he'd look at me and smile and say, my turn. You know, you better have a different mindset to what you're doing.
All things being equal, the bigger guy usually wins.
Yeah, absolutely. Power and stuff always plays a huge point, even in Split Second. But as you know today, we don't use strength.
Yeah.
And one thing about split second, if you're sweating in my class, that means you're doing something wrong.
Oh, good. I'm going.
No. So. It's a different kind of a mindset.
Right. Now, it'd be so easy for me to jump around here, so if I miss something that you want to get back to, make sure you do it. You've mentioned the legal stuff. Now, you've run this through the grist mill of laws.
Yeah, well, we really are careful. We've had attorneys in our class and stuff. We've brought this to that. Remember, to anyone that's listening to this, is that if you ever take a knife away from somebody and cut them with their knife, you're in trouble, because at that moment he was disarmed. You could have escaped.
Yeah.
You could be spending the rest of your life in jail.
And more and more states are doing that. You have a duty to flee.
Yes.
And California is that way, too. Yes. You have a duty to flee.
And we're kind of guilty as a lot of self-defense instructors. We're too busy cutting up everybody when we didn't have to.
Well, exactly. Not to knock other instructors. But we've had instructors come here to teach us. How many? Nine slashes and how quick, Lou? Four or five seconds. Blah, 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 blah. And the reason he taught us all those, he says they may be wearing gear, they may be wearing, so you got to do nine strikes. But you're cutting femoral arteries, brachial arteries, both sides of the neck. And the whole time I'm thinking, I go, yeah, I want to stand before a judge and explain why I did this.
No, you're going to prison.
Yeah. And then I'll get killed by his buddies from the street or that I just
killed. Thing is, if you disarm the person, you have to disengage.
Yeah. It's sad we've come to that, but
that's the legal.
As Christian warriors, we have to take the moral high ground, remain coram deo, and operate within the rules that we're within.
Mm-hmm.
We can argue all day that that's wrong, but the reality is, do I want to never see my family again?
Well, people that train in self-defense, and a lot of people want to get good at their skills, and you'll know when I work with people that they're a true professional, is that they know when to back down, take it to the level necessary, and then back away. That's what a professional is. That truly is what one is. Not just
avoiding
slaughtering and destroying everything you can. So.
Yeah, getting away from
the
problem. And
right.
I mean, think about it. I always look at it this way. If I see a bear in a field, do I run over and start stabbing it?
Right, exactly.
Or do I do my best to stay, downwind and away from
it?
And it's like, but for so long, we as humans, we get this macho attitude, which I see in a lot of the martial arts. And again, I'm not knocking
it
because it's a sport.
Sure.
Football players need to be macho, so do guys that do Aikido.
Right.
And that paradigm is so hard to shake. And even mine, I got my brown belt in the Army, which is a joke. In Kempo.
Uh-huh.
And we saw it today, and I was hoping the soldiers would be here. I don't want to pick on them, but I wanted to get some input from them. How hard is it to unteach these people?
It is difficult. If they want it, they can do it. But it's hard to change a paradigm shift. I think that will change. The thing that helps them change it when they realize how effective they are. And they both know they're not effective right now.
Yeah.
So.
And I guess that's just like any humble student. You have to realize where you're at before you can learn anything. And hopefully we'll have everybody like that tomorrow. People will have that
absolutely.
Attitude.
And don't think I'm bad-mouthing the Army or military training at all.
No,
it is
what it is for where it
needs to be. Absolutely. It's a totally, and that's why I do what I do. And that's why I'm invited to show a different mindset.
From the civilian world, who's your usual student in this? Who's contacting you and saying, hey, come teach me?
That's interesting. It's always different. It is different. I have a call recently where a family wants me to train their family privately because they were from Africa, and they saw the slaughter that went on there.
Mm-hmm.
And he has three daughters, 19, 20, and 21.
Oh,
and he said, please, can you spend a week with my family?
Yeah.
And so each person has their own reasons. Different groups, like I'm here.
Yeah, at a church.
I try to, in myself, I stay neutral in everything that I do as long as I can help. And but I don't train everybody.
So you do reject
absolutely.
Those folks. You mind if I ask you? You probably don't have a set of rules either. You probably go by feel, or
we have a pretty stringent set of rules that we have a group that when they're in my facility,
reviews.
We decide we look at each other real quick, and we'll know. We might have that occasional drug dealer that wants better abilities, or
some guy named Al Qaeda.
It switches out, but we look at that very carefully, and that's
the moral
why
obligation.
We don't even put out the higher level stuff in DVDs because we don't
know where it's
going
to go.
Yes, so it's a concern, and the DVDs are great. But until you meet a trained instructor, it doesn't look real.
Lou and I have been playing with the DVDs, and I learned more today in a few hours than,
none of it looks real. It looks like it's fake.
Yeah,
We
keep waiting for the stuntman to come in. I need a stunt double, actually.
But it's, so, yeah, that's great. very difficult. And anyone that purchases any kind of DVD or whatever for self-defense, you can get a concept from it, and you can practice the concept. But I think any instructor needs to be involved in that. It's real hard, unless it's just a slamming, elbow striking kind of thing.
Yeah,
to take up your heavy bag. But you notice what we do is no hitting.
No. And you need a partner to do it.
Yeah, you need someone to work with.
You need the feedback. There is no way you could teach, because it's radio, I'm at a disadvantage. That wrist thing. And if you guys want to know what it is, you got to come to the next class.
It's just to experience it. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't explain it. You can't show it. You got to feel it.
It's body mechanics. That's all it is. It's weird to see a world without. You can go against the worst violence without violence, but become very exceptionally violent without being violent.
Yeah.
So
it reminds me of and I'm probably way off on what you think it is, but the impression I get is like a warrior monk attitude. Just leave me alone. I'm gonna do my thing. I'm gonna tend my garden. But if you come over here and touch me, it reminds me of okay, that's it. I'm gonna do what I need to do, and then I'm gonna go back to doing the peaceful thing.
Well, the biggest thing is that the person that using firearms, for example, even when we carry concealed or whatever, is that use that weapon correctly. And if you can just take them out with a powder blast instead of putting a bullet in them, or just a sound concussion, do that.
You know, interesting world.
You know, too many people are trying to put bullets in people. And if there's a way out of it, because remember, lead hits a human, you're in big trouble. Yeah. You know, if powder blast hits a person, you're not in that much trouble. That's how close he was.
Now, having watched your videos and listened to you, the paradigms like muscle memory, you know, I want to have you share that with our audience. What's your opinion on muscle memory?
Well, muscle memory means that you're practicing. Muscle memory, first of all, is great for the martial arts because you practice hyungs or kata and forms, those that are in the martial arts world. That's pure muscle memory. You have to be precise and accurate. But they've had some gun people, muscle memory number 14 and muscle memory. Well, that means that weapon has to be exactly where you're practicing.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit to the left or to the right. Your muscle memory is going to get you shot. So everything we learn in split second are concepts. There are no techniques. It's just a concept, and that's it. There's only three things that we do. When you learn those three things, you know everything I know. Mm-hmm. So that's it. Only three.
Yep.
So it's very, very simple.
Yeah.
It, believe it or not, it's so simple you guys can't do it.
Yeah.
Your brain won't let you do it.
You overthink it. It's one of those things where like you're looking for something, it's right in front of you, but you're looking too hard. It's like you mentioned that.
Yes.
You know, if you're watching for things, you're not going to notice them.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. It's a very hard concept to you notice how easy it is to drop someone with a touch.
That was amazing. When you were
it's not it. Amazing. You'll learn it in 1 second.
Us, it's amazing.
Yeah,
we have an MMA fighter. I think he's like a featherweight. He's actually had a couple professional fights from Southern California. He's been professionally trained as an MMA fighter. And you were tossing him on the floor like a rag doll. I mean, boom, that's not even true. He collapsed in your hands.
He has to collapse.
Yeah, he collapses like a... I can't even explain it.
He has to collapse.
Yeah, and it's funny because he's trained to lock up with you and throw some knees and stuff, and you were just... It was a non-starter, MMA.
Yeah, well, I love MMA guys.
I love to watch it.
It's just they're two different worlds.
Yeah. And it's a sport.
Don't ever try to combine the two... the martial art, mixed martial arts world into the street world.
Yeah, street fighter will shoot you and kill you.
You can't put the two together. And the martial arts, some martial arts are sports, but most of it's traditional. Big difference between traditional I teach a traditional martial art and stuff. And it's wonderful. I love all those things, it's very good. So I don't, anyone that's listening, please, I'm not being disrespectful to any martial art.
No.
It's part of my life.
Okay, let's go the other way. Now, can a person, obviously you've done it because you're the master at it. You've invented this system. Could somebody who's doing MMA learn this and function in both worlds?
Yes.
I don't want to discourage anyone.
Oh, not at all. No, it's in the karate people that I train, and it's a totally different mindset. No, very easy. It's just a switch. You shut up. Yeah. So it's not a big thing to do from
That's
there.
It's pretty
so.
Amazing. Now, I don't know if Alaska has soccer moms. I guess
we have
ice hockey
moms. World, yes.
Ice hockey moms.
Soccer is huge in Fairbanks. So we have 9 weekends a year, and then it's winter.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
then it's,
So they put it all into it.
Well, it's crazy.
Do you get a lot of these moms coming in, or are they sending their kids in?
Well, first of all, I don't teach split second. No, in my karate studio, I teach split second to the littlest kids where you start getting away. Escaping.
Yeah.
The little kids don't hurt any. It's part of the bullying program. that we use. So it's kind of cool.
So it's like Stranger Danger.
Yes, but it's totally different. It's much more effective.
Yeah, sounds
like it. And it's worked out very well.
Okay.
A lot of bullying programs. You're smacking the other kid or whatever. And you're both kicked out of school or whatever. You don't want that, so you keep it very, very simple.
Yeah, I've had that problem with my daughter because I taught her like horrible wrist holds. Scarring moves.
Yeah,
and things.
So you get in big trouble.
Yeah,
so
I get called into the principal's office all the time to explain why my daughter beat up a boy.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of pride there, now, with the split second survival, you just kind of alluded to something that, you know, it's there's a certain type of people that you want to teach it to.
Yeah, well, the biggest thing is split second is a woman 110 pounds is just as effective as a 200 pound guy. Exactly, there's no difference.
Yeah,
you know, and that's one of the only things that truly they're just as effective.
Yeah, and the targets are the same on everybody.
Well, remember, they're using usually they're facing weapons in most cases and stuff or whatever, and the threat. So it's they're using the weapon against the person. He'll never know it.
Yeah,
he'll just cut himself and bleed bad, and you run away and go by.
Yeah.
And remember, you didn't cut them; they cut themselves. So it's,
do you ever have people, you know, no names, that never get over their fear of the weapon and can never?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And that's not nothing wrong with that person. But it's just you even saw it today working with the military guys how they're focused on the weapon, you know, and that's a totally disadvantage because they're not seeing what's going on. It's through training, you know, and being in Alaska, we train much differently. Like I say, much more intense. And the people that I send out that I work with, they're very, very talented. They have no fear.
Good.
You know, and because they're trained at that level.
That's a big thing.
Yes, and even here, we're not, you know, taking it up to that fear level.
Yeah, I always teach the class, even if I'm teaching a pistol class or whatever, I always say, you're the weapon.
Right.
You know, and some people don't like hearing that. I go, that pistol, that you know, that stick, whatever I happen to be teaching, that rifle, you should be able to be just as secure in protecting yourself if that doesn't function or you don't have it. And that's what I like about split second survival. There's no nunchucks. There's no levels of weapons.
Yeah, there's, you know, in split second, the thing about what we do is there's no rank systems. Yeah. There's no special shirts you wear. Or there's no, you know, there's nothing because it's just a simple thing that you are. The only difference is in what we do is we don't have other people teach until I myself or the board decides that you're ready because we talk about life and death. And if we have people teach wrong, people could get hurt. And we don't want that.
Yeah, why?
So we're not like some of the programs out there. Come to a weekend, you're an instructor.
I've seen those. I've gone to those.
Know, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that I got to know when I leave and someone I've trained that the possibility of survival is a little bit higher than normal. I take it very seriously. This weekend is very important to me because you guys are asking something from me, and I can only do my best to try to get you somewhat prepared. You won't be in one weekend, but I can at least get you started because, like I say, you've asked something very important from me, you know, and I treat it that way.
Well, especially so people understand that, you know, if you're listening for the first time somewhere, we have a real moral high ground attitude. We don't always want to. It's not about killing the enemy. If some maniac comes into our church, even if he's wielding a weapon, I would much rather take him out of the scenario without hurting him or anyone.
Absolutely.
And sit on him until the cops get there, you know, hot time, whatever. And I, because of the stigma we already have in this movement, in this community, oh, there's a bunch of gun-toting wackos out there. So I think split-second survival really filled a void that we didn't have. We talked on the way back from the airport, and it's like, we had none of this. It was a real hole in our training. So if other people are finding that hole, because we talk to a lot of militias listen to our show, where do you have instructors, or is it only you that comes out first, and then you put them in
touch? I find out first, and then we have schools in New York, Arizona, and Reno.
Reno, okay.
Oh, no, excuse me, Phoenix.
Phoenix.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's only about 9 people certified to teach in the world. So.
Good. So. Do you have a minimum class size, those types of
things? It depends where we're at. Usually we keep it around, depends how far you have to travel. You know.
Do you have a maximum class size? How many
people? It depends on how many instructors we have there.
Yeah.
You know, it depends on every place I go has different needs.
Yeah.
So some people total knife needs, or on their hands and knees, or escape needs, or New York street needs just to get away. Everyone has their own needs, so we adapt it to each need. So it's very adaptable.
So you can customize it.
Absolutely. We make it to whatever they need. So.
Now, what are some of the institutions or places without, you know, you don't have to say exactly who they are. I understand that. But who calls Larry Wick and says, hey, we really want to be part of this?
People like you.
Yeah.
No, it's... I hope there's not many. No. It's people that don't know what it is, and they want to supplement their training. It could be from martial artists to... I've been with some great martial arts school, one in Florida. Excellent school. Just great people. I've met a lot of great people around the country.
Sure.
It's hard to get their world rocked so hard, you know, because of what they thought was real. And so you say, look, you know, this I'm going to show you real. And, you know, so it's very disappointing. But some people take it well. Some people get that, very offended.
I was going to ask you, ever have people go, hey, thank you for your time, but this just isn't going to work for
absolutely.
Us?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm certainly not offended by that.
Yeah, yeah.
Usually people like that are martial arts, and they're pure to their style, and that's fantastic. I have no problem with that.
Of the people in our church, we have a mailing list of about 300 people that we send out for training. And the ones that wanted absolutely nothing to do with it were all the martial artists. So, oh, I've already got that.
Yeah.
I already did that. Or some of the veterans, oh, I learned that stuff in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see we only had a couple soldiers here today. There's a couple more on their way.
Right.
But are you running into that where a lot of people just don't know what they don't know?
Oh, that's definitely that is the... It's kind of like this. It's when I get called in or I go to scenarios or they go, what happened? You know, why did this person get killed, or what? How did this person get cut so badly?
So you actually deconstruct some real.
This is what happened. Let me show you. It's you know why? Because you're trying to do things that don't work.
Shouldn't be done.
You know, so it's hard to put into words because people really respect their martial arts and their training and their instructors, and they follow them.
Sacred cows.
Yes, and I certainly, my students respect me a lot, and you know, I have a couple hundred little kids running around, and they're, you know, that's Master Wick, and they, you know, he's great, you know, and so they follow him kind of blindly sometimes, but I think that's, it's hard to swallow sometimes.
Well, I can tell you personally, we have one guy that's, we decided it was Aikido, right? And I showed him your stuff, I showed him what Lou and I are doing, and he actually said, well, why don't you come try that on my master, Tan?
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, so you want me to go beat up your master because you don't want to take the class? So people take it very personal.
They take it very personal, and that's okay. That's fine.
He wanted his master to beat me up, is what he really wanted.
You know,
yeah, you try this on him and see what happens.
You know, it's the scenarios and mindsets. I've had it happen numerous times.
Do you mind talking about that? Because you had said some things in the car that, you know, people will come and.
Well, you know, it's. How do I put this in a way?
Sure.
Yeah, I've been challenged numerous times.
You have an open dojo?
Yeah, I do. I'm a very very nice guy, and I've had to clear the building once or twice, but but no, it's I set the person down and say, okay, I'm here. Show me.
So that still goes on in the martial arts world, like the.
Well, this is. It depends. It's not even in the martial arts world as much as some of the. Train people in different scenarios and stuff like that. Look, everyone out there, I try to be nice to, and I think they're all fantastic.
Yeah.
And if they don't want to do what I do, I certainly don't say, hey, but the point is let me show you what I do and show me what you do. And let's try both very hard to take each other out and let's see who really does come out ahead. And that's all I ask.
Yeah, just let it speak for itself.
And if I'm wrong, then, man, that's great.
And then you can learn from it.
I need to learn, exactly. Yeah.
Where there was something that needs
absolutely.
To be.
You know, it's split seconds of evolving. You know, I'm going to be here this week. You guys are going to teach me a lot this weekend.
Wow.
Then I'm going to go back and go, wow, we need to work on this.
Yeah, there's this one guy who did this.
Exactly. That's where it all comes from. I'm going, what did he do, you know?
Yeah.
And then we had a little trouble with this guy. I'm like, wow, you're right. What happened?
Yeah.
You know, and it's always a learning process, and it's great.
Yeah.
It's great. Chris Bassini will be here. He's a really nice guy, and you know, he hasn't done. This is the second adventure out with me, you know, going,
oh, okay.
Larry, what do you do? You know, and he's like, well, let's go find
out. Going to that militia church.
Yeah, well, you know, when we came to this one, yeah, he's going, where are you going? Well, I'm not sure yet, you know. The best part was when the mail didn't come, he goes, where are you going? You
know? We didn't have a post office.
Yeah, when he said we didn't have a post office, it was kind of cute. I got a kick out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a good group of, a core of six guys that take very good care of the decisions we make.
Yeah.
And I don't make the decisions.
You're more about the process.
And keeping me out of trouble.
Yeah.
The board does it extremely, and just because I'm the creator of it, no, I have no power in what I do. I
listen to them
because they're all experts, all in different fields, extremely talented, and I listen to them very, very carefully because I'm still the guy from Alaska going, "Hey, everybody, you know."
Yeah.
And
you're the front man.
I listen to them very much.
How much of a role do some of these guys play in helping its evolution?
Oh, do they come without them? Without them, it wouldn't exist.
Oh, okay.
No, they've done a huge, huge part. Those the six guys in Alaska. They don't travel much.
Now, have we seen, was it all the, like, okay, the Live Fire video, which I recommend people get this Live Fire video. Go to splitsecondsurvival.com.
We're kind of out of them right now.
Are you?
No, we got another shipment coming in. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, actually, what we did, we...
Well, let's see. Who's... I don't know who did that, but okay. Somebody sent a text message while we're live on the air. I'm not going to read a text message on the air. It was, I don't know how I can say this where you won't lose respect for me. I've experienced some of those things in my youth because we wanted to see what would happen.
Right.
And to see someone do it in a controlled environment, firing weapons next to the head, I mean, we would shoot over each other's heads to see what it felt like and stuff like that. Completely stupid. Nobody should ever do it. But then when I saw you doing it for a scientific reason... I've never seen anybody else do that.
Well, it's so dangerous.
And the benefit is huge, though.
Yeah, it was. You know, his finger was on the trigger. I mean, you know, 357 stuck in your head. He touches the trigger, your life's over.
Yeah.
You know, it's it's very, very risky.
Other than combat, you don't get that kind of training anywhere.
You don't even get it with real weapons in combat the way we do it because
it's different.
You know, we had to know what happened.
Yeah.
And we really, really wanted to know. That video was actually 4 hours long. We had to edit so much.
I would love to see more.
People think
it.
We're crazy already just for that video.
When the two training cycles ago here, we were over at the pastor's house, and I go, "Pastor, will you put on your copy of..." And the soldiers were just... They would never let us do that in the military. But yet they send these young men into combat not knowing what it's going to feel like, you know, to wrestle somebody on the ground and have that thing, and they teach them, you know, grab the revolver, all these myths that'll get you killed.
Absolutely. Those in the self-defense world out there, if you do carry a weapon, carry a revolver.
Yeah.
Absolutely, revolver.
That reinforced everything that...
You know, it's automatics I like and stuff, but you're close, and he touches that, he grabs that automatic or even blocks against it and it fires. It's going to be jammed. You got a worthless weapon on your hands.
Yeah, revolvers are great.
Yeah. Revolver will keep you concussion and blast. You don't even need to hit him with a bullet.
Now, is there any chance we'll ever get to see an outtakes of that? You told me about one.
No, probably not. Jack's got all the outtakes. And,
okay.
It is the funniest bloopers in the world. Actually, the bloodiest bloopers in the world. But it's a very, very good, very funny. Wasn't funny for me, but those guys are still laughing.
I've been involved in a lot of things on a smaller level, involving arms, danger, video. I've done videography, and the composure at which you conducted yourself after that revolver went off in your hand.
Oh yeah,
I have to say, you deserve an Academy Award just for perseverance.
The only reason I did that so I didn't have to do it again. That was the only reason I did that.
I'd have been yelling, cut, my hands is on fire.
You know, the reason we did what we did, though, is when people argue with you, because no matter what kind of self-defense you do, people will argue with you. And when somebody has an argument with me, I've got to be able to look in the face and say, no.
We've tested it.
I've done it.
We know. We've been there.
You're wrong. You know, You still have people that say, put the gun alongside your head, press it with your head or whatever.
You're gonna
lose a little hearing. Now, whoever says that's never done it.
Done it.
Yeah. You know, he's done, you know.
Yeah.
And so we did everything that we could think of, from shotguns going off. you see the bullet come out of the hand, or my hand as my, the bullet literally shoots right out of my hand and stuff. Mm-hmm. Don't do stuff like that.
No.
But I wanted to say, look, it can be done.
Somebody had to put it on video to show people. I really think it had to be done.
You know, if you ever Google my name or whatever, I get a lot of hate mail, and that's okay. But no one's ever got on me for live fire.
Really?
No one on the internet.
I would have thought everybody at the NRA was just pooping themselves when
no,
they saw
because
it.
When we put the video out there, we said, we know this is wrong.
Yeah,
you
know, I know.
When we did that video, that's why we did it, though, so nobody else would have to do it.
Yeah, it's done.
It's done. There's no more discussion.
Everybody can just go get it and
yeah,
say,
you,
look,
you can't argue with
this.
You can't argue with what you see. You know?
Every single pistol class we have, I always get the question, can I just grab the gun and hold it and it won't fire? So I've actually let people grab a semi-automatic, mm-hmm. fire it, and they go, okay, but now it's jammed.
Right.
You know, so we teach that when you get the weapon, you actually chamber
it. Right.
But the next day after we showed that video, we had a sheriff's deputy instructor come up from one of our classes, and I'm giving the pistol class the revolver. He goes, well, all you got to do is grab the revolver. He says, there's these three little Jewish ladies. He goes, well, just tell them they have to grab the revolver. I go, no, you don't.
No.
And the soldiers are laughing because they had just seen the video, and I invited him to come up and do it, and he wouldn't do it. And then I said, okay, hang on a second. I unloaded it, and I said, now do it. And I pulled the hammer back. I pulled it back, even
right.
though he was holding
right.
it, and I pulled the trigger. I said, your hand's gone now.
Right.
And he kept arguing. We finally had to kick him off the field.
Yeah.
He went home. We gave him his money back, said, here's your $100, go.
Right.
You know,
right.
because we didn't want to waste the time, you know, trying to undo that bad information that he's never tested, but somebody told him who told
right.
him who told him, and he spreads it.
Yeah. Well, that's where those things come from.
Yeah.
You know?
That one little piece of all the videos that we've ordered and all that Lou, he spent his allowance and work money on all those videos.
Oh,
he had to have them. And that one scene alone was worth every penny that we spent on it. Because that bit of education shocked people into going, well, maybe we need to look more into what this is about. You know, and I think it's critical that people see these videos. Now, with some disappointment, you said, those videos are old. We've got new stuff. And I've already seen some of the a hint
right.
of the new stuff today. Are you going to make any more videos?
It's a very one of the problems that we're running into. I'm very honored, by the way, is more and more people have taken my videos and created their own systems with what we do.
Wow!
And even if you're reading some of the magazines, they just take statements right out of what we do.
Yeah.
Which is an ultimate compliment. However, what worries me is they only do half of it.
Yeah.
So because they don't understand, they've never met me to understand mm-hmm. how it works.
I can appreciate
and
that.
And so then they're teaching wrong.
Yeah.
So they're teaching something that would be very effective in making it very dangerous.
Yeah.
And that's what worries me a lot. So I don't think we're going to...
But the current videos are enough to get people introduced to
it. Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, so yeah. I highly recommend everybody get copies of them. As soon as we got ours, we're telling everybody, buy these.
You know, when you work with the public, you can only put out so much information. And you don't want the wrong people to get the information
sure.
also. Yeah. So, and when we made these videos, we actually did it and said, well... This is very hard to learn from a video, so we don't worry too much about it.
Mm-hmm.
The concepts are there, so it works out pretty good.
Real-world applications of what you've taught people. Now, not getting, you know, into just telling war stories, but it's important that people understand that what you're teaching has been used in the field and has worked.
Do
you have any case studies?
Well, the worst study that's out there, I think, than anything, any study that they have, are people that get killed.
Yeah.
If everything I do right and nobody gets hurt, that's a good study.
Yeah.
So the less more people I train and the less studies there are and the less people, and my physician's very hurt, very effective, and I'm very happy about that. When I get all the studies with this number, this percentage goes down, this percentage is hurt, that means somebody's doing something wrong.
Sure.
You know, so I want to get those numbers down. It's really, really, really hard to know what's... When things go wrong... Most people never know what happens because they're not going to be able to tell you what went wrong.
Sure. So. And they'll probably be wrong when they tell the story.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, you said something today in the car that really hit home for me that I've never heard it put this way, and I'm going to steal it from you. You said, oh, if this happens 20% of the time or 40% of the time, that happens. But when it happens to you, it's 100% of
absolutely.
The time.
Absolutely.
And I love that concept.
I don't do numbers at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like mixed martial arts or whatever. You go to the ground 60% of the time or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, no. You know, if you're on the ground, you're on the ground at 100% of the time right now or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so.
That's your world at that moment.
Everything I do is 100%.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't even think of numbers or whatever.
Yeah.
So.
Now, knowing that you train law enforcement, military, mm-hmm. civilians, Has anybody contacted you back and said, hey, this saved my life?
One email, and that was in Afghanistan.
Wow.
All I got was, we worked very high extensively with this guy, and he looked Afghani, so he was probably way in there.
Yeah.
All I got was one text, thank you. That was all I got, just one word, thank you. That was all. So it was cool.
That's awesome. And hopefully, you know, it's the stuff you don't hear about, where the person, you gave them a mindset where they just don't get in the situation where they need it.
Well, yeah, and it's so, violence is really kind of not as extreme as all of us think, because if we're good people and stay out of the way of trouble, it's down low. But you've got to train that it's going to be there. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to hear
Yeah.
It's going to be there when you least expect it, yeah. And that's what you got to train for. It's funny when you work with women, for example, and they have a bag of groceries, and you attack them. They won't drop the groceries no matter what. Drop the groceries!
Yeah.
You know, or something like that. You know, it's kind of funny.
I saw you with Sergeant Rasmussen today, and he doesn't mind me sharing it because he's into training. You were telling him, switch your knife. Put the knife in your other hand. And you had him in a death grip,
right.
And you could have been stabbing him. And the whole time he just locked up. He wouldn't take the knife from the hand that you had.
He's holding it. He's stabbing himself with his own knife.
And you're like, move the knife into the other hand and stab me. And it's the grocery thing, like you just said.
Well, you're fighting your mind.
Target focus, and we just go, we're gonna do this one little thing.
Yeah.
And another paradigm, like when you were working with just the pastor and I this morning, which I didn't expect you to do. And I love how you're all about this. It seems like you eat, sleep, dream. You're about spreading this around to save lives, and I love that. We just wanted to show you the church, and suddenly it turned into a training session.
Yeah.
The pastor said, well, what if he just stabs you? And then you said, well, it's all over.
Right.
That's a whole different scenario.
That's correct.
If the guy's going to kill you, he's going to kill you. You're not going to see it coming.
Well, you're working with a prison guard or whatever, and they say, well, how do you prevent being shanked? You don't.
Yeah.
You don't. As much as you're going to be aware, you know, they got 5 years to figure out the moment you're not.
They spend all their time.
Well, that's exactly right. A street, you've got to understand that when much violence, you're hunted. They're looking for a victim. You know, and you're not, they're planning it out. Not in all cases, but, you know, it's very difficult to prevent. If your number comes up, be ready for that.
Yeah.
It's not looking for the dancing rabbit.
Yeah, it's that kind of a mindset. So.
But when you've got that split second and they want something from you and they're not just there to kill you.
Well, just like we talked about a knife threat. You know, it's my situation. I mean, notice everybody else looks at it the other way.
Yeah.
No, it's actually.
Yeah, who's in control? You or you have the gun, that old movie line that we always hear.
So, because if he was going to take you out, he would have took you out already.
Yeah.
So, most people just threaten you with weaponry and stuff. Yeah. So.
They have a need that needs to be fulfilled. And
it could become deadly, however. Yeah. There are rules that we never break. We never let ourselves get tied up. That's one of the rules we never allow.
Get in the car.
There are certain things we do not allow.
Yeah.
And if you're going to go, you're going to go now.
Yeah.
And especially in Alaska, because you're in the last frontier. You know, you get put in a car in Alaska.
Nobody will ever find you. The wolves will spread your bones.
Yeah, because in 10 minutes, you've got 1,000 square miles. You know,
mosquitoes will devour you. Yeah, you don't even have to worry about it.
Yeah.
Piranha with wings.
Yeah.
Boy, I am just so excited about having you here. There's just so much I want to pick your mind on. And I highly encourage other people to reach out and contact you guys. Your website, splitsecondsurvival.com, you can see little vignettes of the videos on there.
Yeah, just, you know, the website, we're working on it again. Brandon just got back from Afghanistan, you know, our web guy and stuff.
The 300-pound gorilla
guy. He's the guy who would shoot me in the head. Now, he's super trained, by the way.
Yeah.
He is he's the only guy... I would let him lock in.
Thought he was your son or something.
No.
Like, he must be a loved one, because I wouldn't let anybody else.
You know, even when I'm talking, he's locked in position, not moving. He's got it right in my head, just locked.
Yeah, the different things is just like a mannequin. Yeah,
he's an expert. He's one of the best of the best. Yeah. You know,
and he's an operator over there?
He's back. He just got back. Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes, he's. My team is, like I say, is the greatest. I can't give them enough credit, because they are. The nicest guys you'll ever
meet. Well,
we've
watched the video so much, we feel like we know some of them.
Yeah.
You know, we're like, hey, we have nicknames for them. I don't remember names. That's Santa Claus. Stuff like that.
But they're the nicest men you'll ever meet, but they're the most talented also. Yeah.
So why Alaska? Why do you, I mean, if you don't mind, but from a business perspective, not a personal perspective.
Oh, that's the worst place to do a business, in Alaska. But it's the best place to do what I do.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I want to get, like when we train, for example, we're right there. You know, it's, you know.
Don't have to worry about nosy neighbors.
No, well, we're right in a mall. I'm in a strip mall with 40 weapons flying around and stuff, you know.
And nobody,
it's just Fairbanks, hey. You know, it's,
wow.
You know, it's
for those of us that live behind enemy lines, right. It's so hard to contemplate.
No, it's a great place to train. You know, it's you're in the last frontier.
Yeah.
This is it. You know, it's Alaska is an amazing place. It really, really, truly is.
Yeah.
So it lets me do what I need to do.
It's kind of like a double-edged sword. You know,
know
how great it is, but you don't want to go there.
Oh yeah, just
me
to fly down and see you guys is like, yeah, it's like a 12-hour adventure just to get in
here. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a long.
Yeah. Now, here this. 20 years ago, from talking to the folks that have lived here their whole lives, was like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we had the influx of the city folks, and they came in, and they moved here, and they changed things. Have you seen that in Alaska, too?
Yeah, it's changing a little bit. And there, remember, in the entire state of Alaska was just the third the size of the United States. Guess how many people are there? 700,000.
Yeah, less than a million. Yeah, I knew that.
That's an entire state. That's including everything.
Yeah.
So there's nobody home. So it truly is. It is unbelievable. It grows on you. I can't believe I'm still there. You know, I head off in the wilderness at 48 below. I just did my last trip for 7 days. You know, but it's, you know, we talk about survival. Well, there's different kinds of survival. You know, it just lets you know you're alive. You're out there, and it's amazing. It truly is, and it's. I love the challenge of just being there, and it's. I'm not good at stoplights or cities or.
Yeah, it's tough.
That's why I told Chris. I said, "Look, they're picking me. I don't rent a car. I'd be terrified driving around cities, going, you people scare me to death, man.
Yeah.
Forget it. Give me back where I belong. You know, if you wanted to get rid of me, just drop me off in New York. That's it for me. You know.
Yeah, yeah. Trying to survive there.
You know. So it's, each person has their own element. But
yeah.
It's an interesting world. Like, it's total sunlight right now.
Up there, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be neat to see the dark and warm. So you don't have dark and warm in Alaska.
Well, I was like, when we were at the hotel today, the lady apologized for it being cold and wet. And
oh,
like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah,
Alaska.
Yeah.
You know, it's not cold and wet.
No.
And just so you guys know, and all other instructors that we bring here, if Larry brags about being put into the bridal suite, you're not going to get
it. Oh, yeah.
They're having a big weekend this weekend from bikers, and there was no other room available. So we put him in the bridal suite.
Yeah, I got like a thing over my door that says bridal suite. Yeah,
it's hilarious. The pastor's all pointing at and giggling. I'm like, what? And I look on the door and it says bridal suite.
Yeah, it's pretty cute.
Best room in town. So, yeah. But you other instructors are still, you know, no. You're not going to get that. You'll get the regular comfort in when we make sure we book it ahead of time. Now, the philosophy of split-second survival is neutral. Now, you've told me that. You said that, you know, when you go places, you stay neutral.
I stay neutral, yes.
Yeah.
And the reason...
You have to.
Yes. And there are a lot of great people all over the world. And I listen, and whether I'm in a different country or whatever, as long as they're good people.
Yeah.
And so I
that's
try to...
common.
Yes. Like here, I've seen nothing but wonderful people.
Well, thank you.
And
hopefully we'll continue that.
The thing about me is I like to laugh and have fun.
Yeah, it comes out.
I like to laugh.
And you told me that. You said you're going to have fun. That's
yes,
like the
and,
one guarantee.
Self-defense training doesn't have to be a scary...
Strenuous.
And the instructor, believe me, I'm not a bad person. I am the nicest person you'll ever meet. And I don't have to impress you guys. By no means, because, you know, you guys are my friends.
We accept you as you are.
Friends don't
impress
friends.
Like I said, we've watched your video so much, I feel like we know you.
But
And I'm going to embarrass Lou here. You replaced Chuck Norris as his idol.
You know, I've been working with Chuck. He's getting better, but...
he won't come up here. I've tried.
Well, actually, Chuck Norris, my instructor, was his instructor, J.C. Shin.
Well, here's the connection, 7 degrees. When I was 10 years old, he had a chain of Kempo karate schools on the East Coast. He came in one day, and I asked him if he wanted to have an instruction. I didn't know who he was. It was Chuck Norris.
Really?
Him and Richard Scolari, some kickboxing dude.
Yeah, my instructor was his, J.C. Shin.
See, there you go. Yeah. 7 degrees of separation.
There you go.
But, yeah, I've tried to get Chuck Norris here. I've written him letters and stuff. Said, hey, we like your patriotic attitude. We like your Christian basis. You know, we're not too glad about Huckabee, but, okay. But, you know, try and come up
here.
Did
he ever respond?
No. Yeah. No, he never did. He writes for WorldNet Daily, and that's where I write him, too.
You know, he's a neutral person. Very, very nice man. He's never badmouthed any martial arts.
No.
I respect him very much.
Although he's on the border with Steven Seagal rounding up illegals with Sheriff Arpaio.
Really?
Yeah. He volunteered for their posse.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, so are we going to see Larry Wick maybe?
Probably not.
That would be. We could use you.
I'm in enough trouble as it is already.
Right.
You know, I don't.
Right. Now, people that might be listening to this could be saying, wow, this sounds pretty intense. You know, I talked about you dropping the little MMA fighter guy. Shouldn't say little. It'll beat me up tomorrow. How do you encourage people that say, hey, that come to you, that go, what can I do? I'm a 105-pound lady, and I work in the jail, which I've seen that happen. When I was in San Bernardino Police Jail, when I worked there, why do they have a 105-pound little tiny black lady doing this job?
I always remember this, is that anything that is done in the civilian world or the military world, it's the uniform. That's why they wear uniforms. And they always go that everyone's going to respect the uniform.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't matter if you're 100 pounds or 300 pounds. They wear uniforms because they know if they don't respect that uniform, no matter who's in it, their time will be much, much worse.
Yeah.
So that's why they really don't do that.
Yeah.
And that's part of our society. However, when things go very bad, then it goes very bad.
Now, you've traveled quite a bit. You said you've been around the world.
A
few places. Is it bad everywhere? Are people really reaching out to you for this?
I think, let's see, how do I put this in words? I think there's more people more nervous than ever in history of the world of thinking of themselves and their loved ones and violence. I think the Middle East blowing up the way it is, people see our people turn on people. I think they're seeing the possibility of it going global.
Yeah.
Every nick and cranny. You know, you've got people that I've mentioned before that have experienced violence. They want to be able to try to protect their loved ones and stuff like that.
We've been pretty insulated here in America. I know there are horrible things that happen crime-wise, but institutionalized violence around the world is definitely on the rise.
Yes. I think people are being surprised by the Middle East and the things that didn't go the way they thought it was going to go.
Yeah, right.
And stuff. And they can see it could happen in America. I think they see that as unemployment rate keeps going up, and if inflation goes super and the economy collapses, and you see, I think people are concerned.
Yeah.
And they want more than just one simple thing. They need to be able to take care of themselves. I think more and more people want that. Putting away food and ammunition and these kinds. You'll see that more everywhere.
Yeah, we're definitely seeing more and more people turning to us.
You know, and it's a good mindset. There's nothing wrong with being prepared.
Right.
Nothing.
It's not
and
paranoid.
You know, you can save your food or your, you know. Personally, myself, I think it's good that I have all the boots that I need. I have things that if things go bad, I'm already ready to go for many, many, many years. But besides, I can buy it cheaper now than. Oh, the inflation rate goes nuts. 20 years from now,
it'd
be $500 for my $20 jacket, you know, or whatever, you know. So
are you guys teaching that kind of stuff up there, or do you offer?
I have friends that are very much into that, very, very good at what they're doing. I give them advice once in a while, but they're more into the preparing for the food, the water systems and stuff like that,
Because you guys offer other classes. You know, you kind of assessed us and said, look, we're not going to deal with firearms.
Yeah, because you guys are in firearms. Yeah, we do things totally different than you guys do. And I'm certainly not here to change the way you guys do things. I'm happy with where you guys are at.
Yeah.
My job is just to make sure that you, if you get caught, how to survive by using the things that you have around you.
Sure.
I'm not here to change anybody. It's just
said, we have a paradigm here that if somebody can teach us something new, we're not dead set in our ways, you know. And I encourage people to look at that side of what you're offering too, not just the split second survival.
Well, just by talking to you guys, your skills with weaponry is very good. So I saw your training facility here. You don't need me.
Okay.
You guys don't need me. Now, if you needed me here, I'd say, okay, let's start over.
Do you offer that as like an assessment? Would you go in and say, hey?
No,
okay.
No, because...
You just did it for free for us right now.
Yeah, well, it's because of what you have, and my job is not to change what you do.
Okay.
You know, only if you were having a real problem, and I don't see you guys having a real problem. because you guys are skilled at what you do. So.
And we got about 3 minutes left, and one of the big things, and you asked me on the phone, and I asked the pastor who just walked in, you cater to what the needs are. Our big need is, what do we do if we have an active shooter, crazy person come into our church
service?
We're
going to do that tomorrow.
Have you taught that kind of thing before? I'm asking a loaded question here.
Oh, yeah, that's part of what we do.
Part of what you do.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's completely different from the thing that just a little bit that you showed me is completely different than, say, you know, what law enforcement
would
do or what security guards would do.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Yeah. So how important is it, in your opinion, that, say, your ushers, your sergeant-at-arms, whatever community, I don't care if you're doing a Masonic temple or a church, your people that need to know, how important do you believe it is that they need to be trained in removing a hostile subject?
Well, to be a professional, you don't want to hurt that subject, of course, while you protect your name and your reputation. However, and I think it's very important, and you need to train. And most people don't think of that, though, until it happens. Yeah. Like, you guys are already thinking about it, and that's, we'll go over that extensively tomorrow, and that'll be part of your training tomorrow. Yeah. So that will be part of what you do.
Because it's going to be not just to physically, you know, protect everyone, but protect the subject that's being aggressive.
Well, we'll
plus protect ourselves civilly and criminally. And
right. We'll take it up a little bit of a higher level.
Ooh.
And just in case, you know, it'll give you that. Because remember, you guys are skilled.
Yeah.
You know, see, working with unskilled people and skilled people are two night and day different things.
We will have a mixture tomorrow, though. There will be some.
But see, don't worry because you're there already.
Yeah.
See, you guys you're skilled to help that group already.
Okay.
So now, if you had no abilities at all, I'd say, okay, we're going from ground one and up.
Yeah.
There's no need for that.
Okay, good. Well, folks, you've been listening to me talk with Larry Wick from Split Second Survival. We've given the website out, splitsecondsurvival.com. I highly, highly encourage you to check out the website. There's a forum there that's set up where you can sign. Lou, you've been in there, haven't you? I haven't signed up yet. Well, you better. But you can check out vignettes of the videos there. You can order the videos there. And it's just...
If you ever get bored, just give me a call. And I try to call everybody back.
Yeah, you've been really good about it.
Yeah,
as long
as you don't yell at me too much.
You know,
but even when you're yelling at me, I'll call you back and hope you have a nice day. You know, but I really do. If you do call me, I travel a lot. I'm going to be gone for the next 28 days.
Wow.
So
that's because you want to be in the sunlight.
No, actually, I'm in Alaska. I shouldn't leave in the sunlight.
I mean, yeah, you want nighttime. That's what I meant.
I shouldn't be leaving Alaska in the summertime. I'm gone for 28 days. So, so if you won't get a hold of me for a while. So.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and his phone's not working up here, so whoever tries to get a hold of him. But we're going to give you a breakdown after the class, Monday show. I'll be telling you how everything went. And I'm sure it's going to be great. And maybe if we've got some people that are willing to hang around, I can interview them and you can get some feedback here from them. And next time we do one of these, you're doing. We're not starting another show. We're breaking, Lou. You just played the intro. What we'll do is, as we go down the line and we get more advanced in this, we'll have more and more trainings. And hopefully we'll step up. Right now we're at 24 students signed up. So you've been listening to Stronghold Radio. I'm Dutch Jones. Stick around. We're going to have Practical Christianity live with Pastor Warren Mark Campbell. We missed him last Thursday. He was off training in guerrilla sniper class so he could go out and shoot the gorillas in South Africa. Or are they in there in the Congo, aren't they? And maybe he want to talk a little bit about that. But we'll be back with an abbreviated, a half-hour show because we've got to go take care of some other things. We're going to chow. But if you wanted to stay tuned. I encourage you to. Actually, you don't have a choice. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after the break on Stronghold Radio.
It's about our
crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info.
If you're in the battle for the Lord and right, just keep on the foreign line. If you win the battle, surely you must fight, so keep on the foreign line. Brother, keep on the foreign line.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, thank you for tuning in to Stronghold Radio. Welcome to all our Liberty Tree radio listeners. To our pod people, to the folks listening in New York on CB Channel 2, I love that, and to everyone else that's picking us up wherever you're listening, please drop us an email, dutch@dutchjones.info. Let us know where you're listening. We just finished up a great 1 hour with Larry Wick from Split Second Survival. He's here for training this weekend, and I encourage you, highly encourage you to, after the show's over, to go back and catch the beginning. It is Thursday, the 19th of May, 2011. Here we are coming up on Rapture Weekend, and it's time for Practical Christianity with Pastor Warren Campbell. Pastor, welcome back. We missed you last weekend, but or last Thursday, but we're glad you're here.
Dutch, it's good to be with everybody, and good to greet everyone out there and that's listening today. We're glad you've tuned in. Dutch mentioned I had forgotten. I could have prepared a little teaching on Rapture Weekend, but I think we've dealt with it before.
Oh, yeah.
And just needless to say, folks, we'll be training when that when May 21st comes. We won't even be thinking about it. We'll be thinking about how to keep from getting cut with a knife or a revolver going off in our face, and so we won't have time to worry about that.
Sure.
Somebody asked a old friar, this goes way back at the time of the 1500s, 1600s, they asked him, if you knew Jesus was coming back today, what would you do? And the old monk said, well, I'd continue weeding this row of peas. Yeah. That was his answer. I'd continue weeding the row of peas. And so, because in his mind, everything that he did at Coram Deo as unto the Lord. So in this particular case, weeding the row of peas, he was going to do with all his might as unto the Lord. And he had his heart right with God, and he didn't need to, you know, go on his knees and pray. I mean, if he was raptured that instant, he was ready to go meet the Lord, and so he was going to finish doing a good job with his role of
peace.
So it's a very practical thing to consider. And, of course, we are doing Practical Christianity, Dutch, and so I wanted to talk about, since we're just going to be a short little bit here today, folks, I want to talk to you about the thought of practical Christianity, what it means, how it can apply to our lives. There's an old saying that truth that does not motivate us to action is of little value.
Mm-hmm.
If what you're teaching, Dutch, if what I'm teaching does not motivate people to action, it's of very little value to them, just a little bit of head knowledge. So that which we have should motivate us to get involved, it should motivate us to action. We use the saying, put your money where your mouth is. I was going to give a Minuteman some kudos today. He was in the studio with you just a little bit ago. In other words, Minuteman has come. He comes a couple times a year to train with us. Last two times he came, his car broke down.
Sure.
So he's putting his money where his mouth is.
Sure.
In other words, he talks the patriot talk, but he's also, by demonstration of all that he does, going to the border and so forth, he's very committed.
And he even brought somebody along.
And he brought someone
today.
Yeah, recruiting is a good tool. So that's what we want to do, folks, is we want a Christianity that does not motivate us to action is of little value. We talked about that in Matthew chapter 25, so I'm going to begin with that tonight. Matthew chapter 25, it's a pretty famous passage of Scripture. We begin in verse 31 of Matthew 25. Jesus teaching now, when the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory, and before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. That's that, you're familiar with that term, dividing the sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand, come ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. Now here's the part. For I was hungered, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came unto me. And the righteous answered him, saying, Lord, when saw we you a hungered, or fed you, or thirsty, or gave you drink? When saw we a stranger, and took you in, or naked, and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick, and, or in prison, and came unto thee? And the king shall answer and say unto them, Verily I say unto you, as much as you've done it unto the least of these my brethren, you've done it unto me.
Yeah.
And this is where people like that we highly respect, like Mother Teresa, took this literally and has gone out and helped people of the, you know, and this is what Christians have done. They start orphanages. They go out, they feed the hungry and things like that. That's practical Christianity. Then shall he say unto them, On the left hand, depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was a hunger, and you gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you took me not in. Naked, and you clothed me not. Sick and in prison. That's applicable today, folks. Don't desert those people that are in prison in America for the holy cause of liberty.
Yeah.
We have prisoners that are there because of their stand for liberty, for First Amendment rights, Second Amendment rights, etc., and don't run away from them like a scalded dog. Then shall they answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we you hungered or athirst or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and did not minister unto thee? They said, look, you know, they were saying, Jesus, when did we see you? It doesn't have to be Jesus. Whoever needs our help, folks. Then shall he answer them, saying, Verily I say unto you, in as much as you did not do it unto the one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. And these shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous unto life eternal. So Jesus gives us a very practical teaching there in Matthew chapter 25 about that Christianity, like I mentioned earlier, if it's a truth, it should motivate us to action. If it doesn't motivate us to action, it's of little worth. And Jesus said those that did not, were not practical in their Christianity, are going to pay a price. Practical Christianity, the word practical in Webster's 1828 dictionary means pertaining to practice or action. So what we believe, we need to put into practice, we need to put into action. Now sometimes we fail in that, we're not perfect in it, but we should be doing that. If something's practical, it's capable of practice or active use. Webster says it's opposed to speculative. So we can be in the realm of the term is hypothetical all we want.
Yeah.
But that's in the realm of speculative. All of a sudden we need to get into the realm of practical.
And do something.
And this is what motivated Lou and yourself and myself when I saw Larry Wick's DVDs.
Uh-huh.
This guy's very practical.
Yeah.
He's taking it out of the realm of speculation.
Yeah.
And saying this is where the rubber meets the road.
Yeah.
And sometimes you notice, Dutch, in my sermons I'll say, and this is where the rubber meets the road in this message today. In other words, you've got to deal with it. And if you don't deal with it, you're copping out in the message, you know. And so Christianity, we need to. Christ dealt where the rubber met the road in the issues of men's hearts and also in practically meeting needs wherever he could. So when you're talking about practical Christianity, you're talking about how it can be applied. And so I was gone last Thursday as I left for Kingman, Arizona, to the guerrilla sniper class. And that's part of my Christianity, Dutch, when I do that. As you know, that's applied. Now, many Christians do not understand why a pastor would take time out of his busy schedule to go into the desert for several days of training.
Yeah.
And I only know of two others that do it regularly. One is Pastor John Weaver in Georgia, and the other is missionary Peter Hammond in South Africa.
I know of a third one.
And you have another one?
Your son.
Oh, yeah, Warren Luke. That's right. Good. Okay, yeah. So Luke Campbell, my son,
also
he also goes for training, who's a pastor out in the desert. Yeah, so thanks for bringing that up. So we do that because it's part of our Christianity and it's part of our practice. And so it's the same thing for you, Dutch. You teach on survival things, and whenever we have a class, you're the one who's actually hosting this class. We're doing it at the church facilities. So you're making your radio, what you're teaching through the airwaves over the internet, you're making it also practical in your own life.
Right.
So it's not just theoretical.
Right.
And so we want to be practical in our thinking. That's also known, folks, in the two terms that I used before, orthodoxy and orthopraxy. Or orthodoxy is our sound doctrine. Jesus Christ is King, Lord, Savior, born of a virgin birth, and, you know, all these things that we have that we believe that we're in the doctrinal realm, and it's good to teach doctrine, and I teach doctrine, and doctrine is a form of teaching, a mold of teaching. And there's what we call orthodox doctrine, which is well established on who Jesus Christ is and what he came to do, and that he's coming again not in 2 days, but that he will be coming someday.
Right.
And so that's part of our Orthodox teaching. But we have also what's known as orthopraxy, and that's the soundness of our practice. What do we do in terms of practice? I was talking to a man about 3 months ago, and he was a minister. And he said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I got to get back. I got some kind of training I was doing or something." And it was weapons related. And so he immediately said, "Oh, you know," he said, let me talk to you. And so he gave me three stories in his own life where he was faced with the threat of death or imminent danger. And he felt like God had miraculously or supernaturally delivered him. Where sure. he did not, where in faced with a knife or faced with danger, he did not need to pull a knife. He didn't have one on him to pull anyway. Or he did not have to use any self-defense. He doesn't know any anyway.
Yeah.
And so he was trying to show me, Dutch, that with three illustrations, that you don't need any of that, that God will protect you. And that, and people who think that way, they miss the point. God has delivered me. I mean, I took martial arts when I was, and I used to teach it 30 years ago. And have yet to this day have had to use it on someone mm-hmm. in the street. See, so I could say that I never had to use it. God delivered me every time. But there's, but they can't get it through to them that maybe God will deliver you supernaturally, or mm-hmm. maybe He will use your skills to deliver you. That's why King yeah. David could say, you know, in Psalm 144 and verse 1, "Blessed be the Lord which teacheth my hands to war and my fingers to fight." And so much of Christianity just can't seem to get over that hurdle. But we who are practical in our Christianity and exercise with our hands, with our weapons of warfare, that we're not omitting the supernatural. That God, we believe that God will work in the supernatural, that He does work in the supernatural, but that the supernatural, as I always teach so often, the supernatural and the natural go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. So practical Christianity, Dutch, on this level is King. When you think of King David, the youth, his father teaching him how to sling a stone with a sling. It's passed on from father to son. David goes against Goliath, and he is very gifted as a stone slinger. But God supernaturally also directs that stone to hit in the precise spot of the forehead, because he had a helmet on and it had protection around his eyes, and there was only one little spot that he could hit.
Sure.
So while I believe that David was skilled with a sling, also to do what he did, I believe God was directing the stone. So you
yeah.
have the supernatural and the natural
working
going
hand in hand. Yeah.
And if that's a hard, I know that seems like such a hard concept for
so many people think that training for those things is showing a lack of faith.
Exactly.
And it's just it's a fraudulent. I heard somebody actually sent me an email. They go, "A church with a lightning rod on it is a show of a lack of faith," and they were comparing us to that. And I said, write me anymore.
Yeah. So we want to make our Christianity very practical. I was teaching last night, as you know, on Wednesday night teaching on Reverend David Jones
yeah.
from the American Revolutionary War. And he taught a message on July 20th in 1775 that was called Defensive War and a Just Cause Sinless. And it went throughout, that war was printed in pamphlet form. It went throughout the colonies,
yeah.
and people were reading about the
no back. Internet, so
no
that's
internet.
How they did
yeah.
it.
Either that, they either had the pamphlets or tell a woman, which was, goes a lot faster sometimes than telegraph.
Instead of a telephone, tell
yeah,
a woman.
Yeah, yeah they didn't have telephone, telegraph, so they told a woman. They had tell a woman. So anyway, so his message went throughout all the colonies, and it was very, very powerful that, look, we're moving into a time of all-out war with Great Britain, but a defensive war to just cause is sinless, and so he gave his message. But what I like to bring out from that I did not know until I began to do research as we were teaching through America's Providential History was that as he served as a chaplain, and he was also a spy of sorts, he did reconnaissance for General Washington. That was in 1775, 6, 7, 8, 9, you know, up about 1780. And then in 1812, America was once again in peril. And now David Jones is now 76 years of age, mm-hmm. and he's volunteering at 76. Now, 76 in that day was not 76 generally in this day.
100, yeah.
They could be like 96, right?
Yeah.
So this guy was really elderly. And so in 1812, British invaded America. His love for his country led him to, again, this is Reverend David Jones, volunteer his services. However, the authorities rejected the 76-year-old's request. Not a man to be easily deterred, he appealed to his former military comrades and immediately received his commission at 76 as a chaplain there in the War of 1812. In spite of his young companion's skepticism, this aged Baptist chaplain served his country with distinction. And then Reverend David Jones died at home on February 5th, 1820. Yeah. So this is the thought of practical Christianity. We teach it, we preach it, and then we need to practice it. And we know we fail in various ways, but the thrust of our life, and that's what I'm going to ask those of your listeners, is the thrust of your life one that Christianity is very practical? Yes, you are meeting the needs of others. Yes, you are giving a cup of cold water in the name of the Lord. Yes, you're visiting those that are sick. Yes, you're feeding the hungry, those kinds of things. But a part of our practical Christianity, which we believe is a full-orbed gospel, Dutch, mm-hmm. is that it's also part of a martial stand, so that we're being very practical in the martial aspect of Christianity. God himself is known as Yahweh Sabaoth, the Lord of the armies of heaven, the Lord of the armies of Israel. Mm-hmm. And so our Christianity needs to be very practical.
Yeah. Excellent stuff. I love just, I mean, it sounds like a long time ago, 200 years ago, but the fact that the pastors knew this and got this back then, mm-hmm. I yearn for that, and I wish that more pastors would get this and share this type of thing. That's why it's so important that people listen to the Providential History recordings that Lou's put up from the Wednesday nights, because you're going to get just tons and a buffet of historical scriptural knowledge in it. And so many people don't want to apply action. They'd rather sit on their couch or their basement banging away on the internet, talking about what great grievances they have with Obongo or with the Second Amendment being taken away. And they don't apply it there either. Their orthodoxy and orthopraxy, even in liberty, is stunted.
You know, I have found, Dutch, that even within the what would be known as the Reconstructionist movement of Christianity, the theonomic mm-hmm. movement of Christianity, they have a strong orthodoxy concerning Second Amendment rights and the importance of having firearms and things mm-hmm. like that. But when it comes to their orthopraxy, they do very little. So yeah. That's even within the Christian Patriot movement. While they would be active politically, they often let their martial skills wane or not have any at all, because for them it's just stepping over. That's just something they have a hard time with.
And even worse, they gripe and complain about Christians like you and I, and there are lots of us, not just the Church of Kuya, who do this and say it's wrong, but yet they scream and cheer when we carpet bomb northern Afghanistan or something.
Yeah.
and they love war, but they call us warmongers. Yeah. And you're constantly, having that comes up quite a bit. And so many other nations, so many other Christians put it on their nations to do the bloody work for them.
Yeah.
And just go along lockstep and say everything's great. Well, we like I said, we're going to have an abbreviated version here. It's just 20 minutes. I apologize to anybody down the line, but we've got work to do. I highly encourage you to just let it loop and listen to the interview I did with Larry Wick. Listen to where he's coming from, his thought process. So you've been listening to Practical Christianity, an abbreviated version. And we've got to get, because we've got to get down to the church, because some of the women folk have been cooking for our folks that are coming in. And I ask for your prayers for this training weekend for us, because we won't be with you tomorrow. We'll be back Monday. So just some prayers for protection and things that, that nobody gets hurt, and that everybody learns the best they can do. Good night. God bless. And God bless you in all you do in the holy cause of liberty. Thanks for listening to Stronghold Radio.